Good morning, and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book Study. My name is Katie F., and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. Today is Tuesday, March 28, 2017. Today we are reading from the Big Book, Chapter 2, and we are on page 19, the first paragraph. Today's readers are on the 12 Steps, Lorraine W., 12 Traditions, Diane G., and reading the text, Rachel W., Allison L., and Adini M. The reference numbers for Monday, March 27th, are 7 a.m., 9767, and 10 a.m., 9768. That's 9767 and 9768. OA Preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose. OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book Study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. I will now ask Lorraine W. to read the 12 steps.
Good morning. This is Lorraine W., recovered here in Pennsylvania. Can I be heard?
Yes.
Okay. The 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous. Step 1, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. Step 2, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Step 3, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God, as we understood Him. Step 4, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Step 5, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Step 6, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Step 7, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. Step 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Step 9, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. Step 10, continued to take personal inventory and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. Step 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. Step 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we try to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thank you.
Thank you, Lorraine. I will now ask Diane G. to read the 12 traditions.
Good morning. This is Diane G. from New Hampshire. The 12 traditions. Number 1, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. 2, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3, the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4, each group should be autonomous, except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6, an OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7, every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting declining outside contributions. 8, Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create our service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues. Hence, the OA name might never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. And 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thank you, and I pass.
Thank you, Diane. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our absence requirement for moderators is 1 year, and for readers is 6 months. There is no absence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you are done sharing, let us know by saying pass. Then press star 1 to mute your phone. Don't just mute your phone by hitting the mute button. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speakers should be muted. Today, we resume our study of the Big Book, and we're in Chapter 2 on page 19, the first paragraph. I will ask Rachel W. to begin reading.
Good morning, Katie. Can you hear me okay?
I can. Thank you.
Okay, good. Thank you so much for your service, and good morning, everyone. This is Rachel W., recovered compulsive overeater calling from New York. Page 19 at the top. None of us makes a sole vocation of this work, nor do we think its effectiveness would be increased if we did. We feel that elimination of our drinking is but a beginning. A much more important demonstration of our principles lies before us in our respective homes, occupations, and affairs. All of us spend much of our spare time in this sort of effort, which we are going to describe. A few are fortunate enough to be so situated that they can give nearly all their time to the work. So this is so powerful, and especially the sentence that says that elimination of our drinking is but a beginning. Oh, isn't that the case? You know, I came in here 18 years ago, and, you know, layers upon layers have been revealed since then. But also another thing that struck me was the first sentence, we don't make a sole vocation of this work. However, it really does, it is the foundation of everything I'm doing in my life, you know, whether it's in my home, whether it's in my career, it's in every arena of my life. And what I do is, what I've been given, you know, is a process of going from complete self-centeredness, complete selfishness, being in a place of thinking really like only of myself, into being transformed into someone who's useful and productive and someone who actually has something to offer, you know, and I take these 12 steps with me wherever I go. And you know, in a work situation, it could be, you know, I'll just sit and say, I'm powerless over this unmanageability. You know, I don't know about you, but I continue, it being a recovered person, I continue having unmanageability in my day at times. And I have to ask myself, is this something to do with me? Is it something not to do with me? And I go and take it into step 2 and say, you know, God, I believe you're powerful and I know your power. And do I believe that God has the attributes to handle this situation? You know, if I don't know what to do, do I believe my higher power has the attributes? And if I don't believe that, I have to ask myself why I'm limiting my higher power. And then I also have to think, is there someone I could ask to help me? You know, besides a sponsor, but someone at work, you know, is there someone in a work situation that I can actually reach out to? Are my defects keeping me from reaching out for help? And I have to think to myself, the step 3 prayer, you know, just say, like, God, I'm willing to put myself into your hands, I'm just make me useful. And then I go take it into step four. What part of me is out of alignment? You know, normally it's control or fear, or, you know, the object there is to have the ability to walk away from it. And then I admit myself, my faults, to God and to myself, and I maybe call someone to do a 10 step. And at that point, I ask myself, you know, am I willing to have God remove this defect, these defects I've been feeling? And sometimes the answer is no. You know, it's just like the hard time putting down a defect the way I did a food. And if I don't have the willingness, I pray for it and then come into the 7-step prayer. And then I look at what if I have any amends to make and clean it up. And then I make amends to myself through self-compassion and make those other amends. And then I continue to do the inventory and do something spiritual, and then I could be of service. So this is such a powerful process, and we can take this with us, obviously, you know, wherever we go. And I'm really grateful for the service today, and I thank you so much for listening and for letting me share.
Thank you, Rachel. Okay, who would like to share? We're on the first paragraph on page 19.
Nessa R.
Kim G.
Yes. Nessa R, Tina S, Melissa, MG, Melissa C, Sarah W,
yes. Harlan G.
This is Larry.
Harlan, Larry. Okay. How about let's go with those seven. Okay, I have Nessa R, Tina S, Kim G, Melissa C, Sarah W, Harlan G, and Larry K. Okay, let's go. Nessa R, followed by Tina S.
Thank you. Good morning. Vision for you. This is Nessa R, and I am a recovered compulsive overeater in Toronto, Canada. The elimination of our drinking is but a beginning. I love this phrase, this sentence. I use it often because it's packed with meaning, and it tells me two things. Number one, that the elimination of our drinking is the beginning. Nothing can happen, recovery cannot ensue unless and until we become absolutely abstinent, absolutely entirely abstinent, complete elimination of all binge foods, binge ingredients, binge behaviors. We cannot hold on to anything. But then it tells me it's but a beginning. Meaning it is the beginning, but it is not the goal. The goal here is recovery. The goal here is to be in a place where the food is in a position of neutrality, where I have a conscious and intimate relationship with my Creator, where I derive all sense of ease and comfort from Him, and not from the food, which tells me that in order to get there, I have to work a program of recovery and not a program of abstinence. You know, I tried to work a program of abstinence for a long time. You know, I went to meetings, I made the three phone calls, spoke to three people, I read a ton of literature, you know, the Daily Reader, Voices of Recovery for Today, all these things. I wrote in my journal. I tried 90 meetings in 90 days, all these things. And, you know, I did get abstinent for a little while, but then I was not. And I tried it again, and I got abstinent. But it never lasted until I worked a program of recovery. And then the program of recovery, which is the 12 steps contained in this book, is what brought me to the real solution, which is God and deriving myself of even comfort from Him. So it tells me two things. Start with absolute abstinence and continue towards the ultimate goal, which is recovery. And with that, I pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Nessa. Tina S., you're up, followed by Kim G.
Thanks, Katie. Tina S., recovered compulsive eater, anorexic in Florida. Grateful to be on the line, and thanks for some great shares already this morning. You know, I love this paragraph because it tells me exactly precisely what I need to do once I've done the work. None of us makes the sole vocation of this work, you know, this work that I've done, the 12 steps. And, you know, I always wanted to like retire from my job so that I could do this work. And basically early on it was just that I didn't want to work at a career, you know, so today I have the opportunity to do both, you know, and it tells you that my main purpose is to be of service to God and to those about me in the work area. And I like that it talks about that, you know, once I put down the drink, that's just the start, you know, that's just the beginning. That's where I start from, you know, and then much more important is the demonstration, you know, that showing of, you know, I got to do this thing. And everybody knows on this line that I'm a talker. I can talk. But am I doing the deal? Am I demonstrating in all areas of my life? You know, it talks about in step 12, you know, we practice these principles, which are the 12 steps. In all our affairs, you know, work, home, friends, any place, you know, I was willing to do this as it had to do with stay in abstinent. You know, I can follow a food plan for a period of time till I can't. It was already heard. Am I doing this in all my affairs? You know, my romances, my finances, my relationships, my career, you know, one day at a time I have the opportunity to demonstrate, to show others what someone has shown me and continues to show me what to do one day at a time, as long as I'm free from the drink, the alcoholic foods, I have a shot. And with that, I'll pass. Thanks.
Thank you so much, Tina. Kim G, you're up, followed by Melissa C.
Good morning. Good morning, all. My name is Kim, and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater from South Jersey. I get all tingly when I hear that sentence. We feel that elimination of our drinking is but a beginning. You know, there's a saying I love, the truth shall set you free, but first it's going to piss you off. And man, that pissed me off. You know, I wanted to be able to work the steps in order to get abstinent. And this book tells me over and over the first thing I have to do is put that food down. You know, it reminds me of 6 years ago now, I was out walking my dogs in a snowstorm, and I slipped, and I looked down, and my foot was facing 180 degrees the wrong way. And when I got to that hospital, they told me that I broke, and I don't know the bones, but the outside bone of my calf, tibia, fibia, something, right in half. But the larger aspect of my disease, I ripped every single muscle and tendon in my ankle. And my doctor explained to me that the greater aspect of my injury was all that muscle tears. But first and foremost, I had to stabilize that bone. I had to have surgery the next day. I had to put pins and screws, and they had to stabilize that because I wasn't going to be able to do the physical therapy unless that was stable. I didn't have the option to say, hey, doc, why don't we do the physical therapy first, and then I'll work on that broken bone. It's the same exact thing. We have a twofold illness in here. I have an allergy of the body, which means I have to have entire abstinence. I was told that in the doctor's opinion. And I have a mental twist, and I'm also told in the doctor's opinion I have to have an entire psychic change. But there is an order to that. You know, the simple way I think about it is in the doctor's opinion, which everything comes back to that doctor's opinion, is men and women drink essentially because they like the effect produced by alcohol. I cannot get the effect from the steps if I'm still getting the effect from the food. It's as simple as that. And I think of this TV show I saw many years ago where they had people drinking at a bar and just randomly they said, okay, everybody stop. How many of you think you're okay to drive? And 80% of the people raised their hand. And they gave them breathalyzer tests and they were horrified, many, many, many of them, because they were showing that they were above the legal limit. And they were saying, I didn't even know I was impaired. Oh, my God, I feel fine. I had no idea I was impaired. And they were so upset about it. That is the truth. We are eating and we think, this is not as bad as alcohol. I'm not impaired because our alcoholic life becomes normal. We have to accept the fact if we are impaired when we're in the food and we don't have the mental acumen to attack the larger aspect of our disease, which is the mental twist. So quite simply, again, I cannot get the effect of the steps while I'm still getting the effect of the food. Therefore, and foremost, we feel the elimination of our drinking is but a beginning. And with that, I pass.
Thank you, Kim G. Okay, Melissa C., you're up, followed by Sarah W.
Hi, good morning. It's Melissa C., recovered compulsive overeater in New York. And, you know, what this paragraph really tells me is, my entire life, you know, I can't have two separate worlds. You know, I do have to work and remain recovered. And they are intermingled together. You know, I have to go out in the workforce. I have to be a mom and a wife, or I get to be a mom and a wife, and I get to go out in the workforce. And I don't do my program in isolation. You know, I don't put my focus on, you know, working the 12 steps just in rooms of OA. I actually have to live it in my outside life, you know. So putting the food down was just the beginning, you know, and working through the steps and going through the big book is taught me and continues to teach me how to live my life, you know. And so here's the truth for me, you know. I thank God I'm abstinent and the food is down and the desire to eat is removed, but I still get desires to micromanage. I still get desires to gossip, to judge, you know. That has not been eliminated. And I can get really busy during the day and think I'm doing great. And then, you know, I woke up in the middle of the night. I've been up since 2 a.m. And I'm learning insomnia for me. I keep getting reminded over and over, is God really trying to get my attention? Because I can force it out just so long in the busyness of the day. And I'm grateful that we have a kind of a nightly review so that my defects came to the forefront. And, you know, and I thought I had one answer when I went to bed at night, but I woke up in the middle of the night because I realized, you know, I have to practice the principles of this program in all my affairs, and I need to be kinder, I need to be more tolerant, I need to be loving with people in my workplace. And if not for this program, I would not know that today. You know, if I weren't entirely absent, I'd have no idea. I would be going this morning through Dunkin' Donuts, shoving it down my throat, and then going in and wrecking havoc. And I don't get to do that today. I get to do it differently. Thank you. With that, I'll pass.
Thank you, Melissa. Okay, Sarah W., you're up, followed by Harlan G.
Good morning. Thank you, Katie, for your service. This is Sarah W., grateful, recovered, compulsive overeater from Iowa. I love the paragraph, and I love what people have shared too. I like to notice things, and what it says is, nor do we think its effectiveness would be increased if we did. You know, sometimes it's the quality, not the quantity, and I think that's really important. And for me, you know, I work, and I also have a spouse, and I have children and grandchildren, so I have to really balance these things. And although I really want to help, I have to think of what is my motive in helping, and is it for adulation, is it to look good, is it to feel in control? And so I really have to be very cautious with that. And also, the next sentence, which I think is probably the most important sentence in the paragraph, says, as everybody's touched on, the next two sentences, we feel that elimination of our drinking is but a beginning, a much more important demonstration, and it does say demonstration, of our principles lies before us in our respective homes, occupations, and affairs. And all over the book and all over the 12 and 12, it talks about principles. So these are things that I aspire to. This doesn't mean for me that I can live up to these ideals perfectly. But the principles of the program in the first step is honesty. The second step is hope. The third step is faith. The fourth step is courage. The fifth step is integrity. The sixth step is willingness. The seventh step is humility. The eighth step is brotherly love. The ninth step is justice. The tenth step is perseverance. The 11th step is spiritual awareness, and the 12th step is service. And I can constantly take a look at that if I'm in those principles, if I'm living there. whether it be at my workplace, as other people have said, or in my home. And the biggest thing for me is if I'm really living this program, yes, abstinence is, you know, number one, but I have to live in those principles. And that means that I don't get to judge other people, that I really have to look at everybody's journey as theirs. This is mine, and that's theirs. And it's not for me to say if theirs is right or wrong. It's for me to look at my own and continue to work on that. And with that, I pass. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Sarah. Okay, Harlan G., you're up, followed by Larry K., and then we'll open it up for more shares on page 19.
Thank you very much, Katie. It's Harlan G. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater in Scottsdale, Arizona. Can I be heard okay?
Yes, perfect.
Oh, thank you. Okay, I also want to thank Team Tuesday for making this meeting possible. Everything I was ever told from the time I was 3-4 years old was a lie. Because everybody told me, whether they were adults, doctors, dentists, medicine men, astrologers, you name it, they told me that if I stopped eating so much, everything in my life would be fine. Everything in my life would be wonderful. And for periods of time, I probably went on my first date, I probably went on my first diet when I was about 7 or 8 years old. I remember hunkering down on my own willpower, trying not to eat so much when I was 7 or 8 years old. And it didn't feel very good. They told me things like, don't eat so much, you'll feel better. Man, they were right. When I don't eat so much, I feel anger better, I feel fear better, I feel like killing myself better, I feel jealousy better, I feel crushes on girls better, I feel everything better. And those feelings would burst to the surface, and as I would feel those feelings, the only thing I could do to assuage those feelings was to go to the food, because the effect of the Kit Kat bar, the effect of the Oreo cookie would make me feel fantastic for about 8-9 seconds. And then the allergy would set in, and I would not be able to control the amount of those things that I would eat, and I'd be off to the races again. And one more time, I let myself down. One more time, I was weak. One more time, I was lying to myself, and it made me hate myself and hate the world around me. And then I came into program, and it says, we feel the elimination of our drinking is but a beginning, because in my life, at the pay-in ways, in my life, at every juncture of my life, I felt that the elimination of my drinking was the finish line. The elimination of my eating was the goal. It was the finish line. It was the ultimate accomplishment. And now I find out it's just the beginning and a much more important demonstration, action word, of our principles, the steps. The principles are the steps. Lies before us in our respective homes, occupations, and affairs. And what is he saying here? Work the steps and practice these steps in every area of your life, and everything will be different, but you won't feel the need to compulsively overeat. I have not compulsively overeaten in over 18 years, nor have I wanted to. And I have refrained from compulsive overeating through the working of these steps in the book Alcoholics Anonymous, in the Fellowship of Overeaters Anonymous, and I have refrained from compulsive overeating, and I have done so happily. That this is the greatest way of life imaginable. With that, I'll pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Harlan. Okay, Larry K., you're up.
Good morning, Katie. Thank you for your service. I'm at Larry K., recovered compulsive reader from Chicago. You know, in this chapter, there is a solution. I'm confronted with this idea that this seemingly hopeless state of mind and body is actually not hopeless at all. In fact, I learned that there's a way out of this self-destructive spiral, and it's more than merely a possibility. See, it's a guarantee. You know, follow these instructions precisely, and your heart's going to change. You're going to be brought into alignment with your creators. And when that happens, I'm no longer a prisoner. I'm no longer in my self-imposed prison. And you know, I've heard it said, mercy is not reserved for the deserving. You know, rather mercy is kind of a grace born out of compassion. I can't earn this. I can't buy it. It's only reserved for the sick among us. So if you've got life figured out, why you don't need a spiritual solution. But here's the kicker. See, I'm not going to be able to bring the solution to light through willful adherence to my own desires, my own ideas. So the prideful one that's full of answers for myself and for you, that guy needs to die while I'm alive. And Roland Hazard, following Jung's advice, eventually found a spiritual solution to alcoholism. And then he rescued Ebbie Thatcher. And Ebbie then went to Bill to pass the message on to him and introduce Bill to the Oxford Group message. And Bill passes it along to Dr. Bob. And then, I don't know, here we are, March 28th, 2017. And we're passing it along to each other. That's either one heck of a hoax. You know, I've been sold a bill of goods that's been working for people like me for over 80 years. I've been bamboozled into a life better than I've ever known. And you know what kept me from tapping into this solution? Pride. You know, I've heard it said pride is spiritual cancer. It eats up, you know, all possibility of love, contentment, even my common sense. And prayer is powerful for me. Here's my prayer. God, help me to set aside everything I think I know about the solution so I have an open mind to a new experience. And with that, I'll pass. Thanks.
Thank you, Larry. Okay, who else would like to share on this paragraph? We're on page 19, the first paragraph. None of us.
Barbara B.
Danielle O.
Leslie okay. W. Okay.
Jackie B. from the Bronx.
Okay, I have Barbara, was it D or E?
B as in boy.
Okay, Barbara B. And then was it Danielle?
Yes.
Okay, and then
and Jackie
W,
B.
Jack and Jackie B. Okay, anyone else?
Vasa O.
Vasa O. Okay, well, let's go with those. We have Barbara B., Danielle, Leslie W., Jackie B., and Vasa O. Go ahead, Barbara.
Thank you. This is Barbara B., recovered compulsive overeater, Massachusetts, calling in from Florida. When I read and think about, we feel that elimination of our drinking is but a beginning. I love the image that it calls up, which is an image from an AA booklet that I was given many years ago that says that the abstinence is a launching pad. And I think of that and realize it and live it and carry that message often, that it is just that. It's the launching pad. It is just the beginning. I never can get off the ground. I can't get onto the steps if I'm not launched. And that's my launching pad. And then I begin that slow and steady or whatever time it takes, the walk of the steps and where that leads me. And then it, I think very wisely, takes me in the reading to the call to a demonstration of these steps, of these principles, at home, my occupation, all my affairs. Because it'd be very nice, and I used to think I could live in that fourth dimension that Bill talks about, you know, that heavenly space. I could sit in my little, you know, corner of the world and be in rapture. But I've got to, you know, as the song says, don't talk of love, show me. So when I carry the message to another, in addition to the launching pad of getting off the ground, I've got to show that walk through all areas of my life, applying the principles, as it says, practice these principles in all my affairs. So it keeps me grounded in reality and yet combining that with a very rich and deep spiritual life. And I love being reminded of the combination. And I love being reminded that none of it is possible if I haven't gotten off the ground with abstinence. Thank you. I pass.
Okay, thank you so much. Danielle, you're up. Leslie W. follows. Danielle, press star 1 to unmute, please.
Okay, hi, everybody. Thought I was unmuted. Sorry.
Okay.
Danielle, compulsive overeater from Northern New York. You know, this chapter and this big book about Alcoholics Anonymous comes alive only when I pick the book up. And that's what's amazing. Because it amazes me every single time that I read something that if something just comes alive. Something, those words popping out, and start to see and feel differently. And I was reading about that today where the Psalms, where that outlook, I have a new outlook on life. And sure as heck, I have been working this program and doing this stuff day to time. And thank God for a new outlook, because I was the one who beat myself up, beat myself down because of the way I ate, and I didn't know that I had it. And a few 24 hours ago, I came into this program, and the miracle started to happen. And that's what I want. That's what I didn't know I wanted at the time, but in fact, what I needed to God for that. And that's what I get to live out each day. As I walk this program, off this program, a day at a time, I run into people that I don't know have or are afflicted with this disease. And, you know, some are obvious, some are not, because in my work life, I don't always know what those are. Because I pretty much, you know, work a program and I find things and I react. So I was at a conference this past week where I was running into a lot of work associates, and it was a big conference. And it ended up, I sat with a co-worker that worked in a different city in a different building. And she was talking about how much she was struggling with food. And I got to be of service. I got to sit with her and talk to her. And I told her what I was doing in Overeaters Anonymous. And I loved how much she wanted to connect. But ultimately, I have to remember that whatever I share with her may go somewhere or it may not. And that's the truth of this. If it tells me I don't have a speech with things that I need. And it was sometimes a difficult trip because there were so many interesting things going on. It was a lot of food smells, it was a lot of tantalizing things going on around this conference. But I stayed up. I had the food I needed. I had the resources I needed. And I made it all the way through. And I was so grateful for that. And I wanted to share that because I know that, you know, we talk so highly of what happens, just the benefit that happens, and yet there are just the small tiny things that I walk through every day. And for that, I am so grateful that I got to share that on this morning's meeting. So thank you, everybody, for being part of my report. And that's it. Thank you.
Thank you, Danielle. Leslie W., you're up, followed by Jackie B.
Thank you. This is Leslie W., recovered in Tennessee. I'm so glad to be able to share this morning, and what I wanted to focus on was a much more important demonstration of our principles lies before us in our respective homes, occupations, and affairs. I'm just going to be like Charles H. this morning, and I'm going to keep it real. For me, you know, the way I have behaved in my home has been the hardest to hardest place. It's been the hardest place to practice these principles, and I am really good at putting on a face that I think the world wants to see, and then coming home and being the total other face to my husband and the people that live with me, the people that know me, you know. I mean, my primary occupation as of right now is a homemaker, you know. I mean, I have two little kids. I've got a seven-year-old and a two-year-old, both boys, both wild and crazy. So, you know, for me, the most important demonstration of these principles is in my home. It really is, because I can't be out there helping my fellows and preaching this book and then come home and yell at my kids or be snippy to my husband, and ignore his needs, ignore their needs, and basically the type of person that I was before program and before recovery, you wouldn't have liked that person, I don't think. You know, I didn't like that person. I was Dr. Jekyll and Hyde. I really was. And the outside world thought good things about me. But I'll never forget my husband saying to me, you know what, Leslie, you're nicer to total strangers and to your fellows in program than you are to me. And that really hit me between the eyes, because I know that this is where I have to work the hardest in practicing these principles in all my affairs. The simple elimination of my compulsive overeating. Oh, honey, you know, I'm not picking up anymore. Aren't you proud of me? Isn't everything great? No, everything's not great because I wreaked havoc for years, and I'm still trying to make up for some of that. I'm still making amends to all those times when I shut him down in the bedroom because guess what? I don't feel good about myself tonight. So I don't care what you need. I mean, let's just be honest, you know. So today is different. And no, I don't do it perfectly every day. But thank God I have a program. And thank God I have fellows to call for 10 steps and a way to stay in the solution so that I don't have to pick up and I don't have to be Dr. Jekyll and Hyde anymore. And with that, I pass.
Thank you, Leslie W. Jackie B., you're up, followed by Vasa O.
Hi, I'm Jackie B. from the Bronx. Can I be heard?
Yes.
Thank you. Thank you, everybody, for your service and for letting me share today. You know, I totally get the early, everybody shares, that's me. But I also, too, got a lot out of, we feel that elimination of our drinking is but a beginning. A much more important demonstration of our principles lies before us in our respective homes, occupations, and affairs. And that is so true today. Today, I face my fears. I face my anxieties one day at a time by being of service to everyone, including my family. Just recently, an example, my husband's retired, even though we're young, but we have a 14-year-old, and I'm not. And I'm not ready to retire. But I was being wishy-washy about it instead of stating where I was really at, because I wanted him to like me. I want them to accept that, look, I'm abstinent. I'm doing everything I can. Give me kudos. Don't give me, you know, aggravation. But you know what? Like everybody else said on this line, I do a 10-step. I ask for help in this program. I look at my side of the street. My side is I can't be wishy-washy. You know, I don't want to move. And I'm now learning that it's okay to state your side of the street, whether people like it or not. I don't need to be cruel. I don't need to be heartless. What I need to be is honest. Because if I'm honest and I'm not picking up, and then I can be of service to my family. I can be of service to the man in the street. I can be service to people in program. It's funny. You know, yesterday I reached out to a whole bunch of people at night. They don't usually get a text from me at night. And they're all saying, are you okay? Are you okay? And that's great. But all I was trying to do was say, hey, I was thinking about you and I'm sending out some good vibes. You know, that's a change in me. It's, you know, not sitting there and wondering what's in the refrigerator. It's not sitting there and saying, why doesn't anybody get me? It's today saying, hey, how can I be there for others? How can I enrich other people's lives by my experience, strength, and hope? How can I give back what I've been so easily given in this program after 25 years of doing the recovery according to Jackie's willings and not willings. Today, every morning, I give thanks to my higher power. Every day, I say, hey, you know what? It's not about me today. It's about what I can do. And by me doing, I am giving back, and therefore the food does not call me. And for that, I am so grateful. And thank you, everyone, for your clarity, for your support, and being there for me. Thank you, and with that, I pass.
Thank you, Jackie B. And Vasa O., you're up.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. I'm Vasa, grateful, recovered, compulsive overeater. Grateful to be here with all of you. And I'll just read this part here. We feel that elimination of our drinking is but a beginning. A much more important demonstration of our principles lies before us in our prospective homes, occupation, and affairs. And there was nothing more that I wanted in this world, really, than to put the food down that I had been trying to put it down off and on for many, many, many years. And I could put it down for a little bit, but I could never put it down like I have done it over the years being in the program. I had the husband, I had the house, I had the kids. And I gave into the food addiction because I couldn't do it any longer. I didn't even know it was a food addiction. I didn't know it was allergy. I didn't know anything about that mental obsession until I came into the program, to reading this big book, you know, in the doctor's opinion. I was so relieved to find that out because I didn't know what was the matter with me. Finally, I thought, oh, okay, now at least I can deal with it. It's like having a cancer, you know. And, you know, in those days, I was so terrified of getting cancer, you know, and now they have found a lot of cures for cancer. But I remember hearing in Overeaters Anonymous, we can arrest our disease one day at a time, you know. With cancer years ago, people died, you know, or there was not enough. They didn't know enough about it. And today, there's just so much help in that area. But hearing that I could live, I can put the food down one day at a time, and then the addiction can, you know, we can live with it if we work the program the way the steps are laid out. And again, for me, it was just to surrender. My life, it's nothing like it used to be. I don't even remember that person. But I get reminded here when we get back into the steps again, from where I was to where I am today. I, you know, my life has changed so much over the years. I'm much more patient. I've gone through step four, all the resentments and all the insecurities that I didn't think I had to go through that stuff. I thought I just needed to put the food down and I'm going to have a perfect life. Well, I kept getting reminded, Vasa, if you don't work the steps, you're going to go back into the food. So I chose to stay here and work the program and stay in the steps as they are laid out and back and forth. It might sound boring, but for me, it's not boring. It's growing and healing. I went back to school. I had a job. I got a job that I loved.
Time.
I wrap it up. If I didn't have any of this stuff, if I didn't work this step, I would be probably even dead today. Thank you for letting me share that task.
Thank you, Vasa. Okay, we have time for two more shares. Would anyone else like to share on page 19, the top paragraph?
Mary D.
I am.
Mary D. And was it Kelly F.?
No, this is Raquel, but I'll wait for the second hour.
Okay, so Mary D., Kelly S., and Leia M. I'm sorry, if Kelly, that's not your initial.
That's okay, maybe. That's it.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay, let's have Mary D., Kelly S., and Leia M. If you all could split your time or not. Okay, thank you. Go ahead, Mary D.
I'll try to be very quick. Hi, this is Mary B., gratefully recovered compulsive eater, currently in Southwest Arizona. And this last line in this paragraph, anyway, let me just share this update. When I retired 18 years ago, my company gave me a retirement party. somebody at that party asked me what I'm going to do with my time. And my first thought was, I'm going to a meeting. But I didn't say that because the questions would have come up, what meeting and so forth. So my answer was, I'm going to water aerobics. And I can tell you honestly, that was my intention. But in 18 years, I have not been to one single water aerobics. I have dedicated my life to this program. And when my daughter-in-law's father asked me one day, Mary, what is it you do with your spare time? And he's always making a fuss about my weight loss and keeping my weight off and everything. And I just simply answered, I help people lose weight the way I did it. And that was my simple answer. And I have been very, very active in program all these years. But now life is changing. As we go through this process of maturing, right now my husband is losing his vision. He's very nearly blind. And so I'm needed. I'm needed in this area to help him. My job now is caretaker. And I'm so, first of all, thankful that physically I'm able to do this. And with all the years in program, I really believe that these last 2 years in A Vision for You and the work that I've done here has prepared me to be able to give in the way I need to give of myself today. I haven't stopped my program. Of course, I've kept the sponsees that I have had over the years. I have my sponsor. Thank God she has been seeing me through this adjustment that I've had to make. But I haven't taken on any new sponsees and may not be able to for a while, and that's fine. But I am...
Time.
Thank you. I am so grateful for what I've received that has prepared me for any adjustment that life brings. Thank you for the opportunity to share this morning. Thank you for your share. I pass.
Thank you so much, Mary. And Kelly S., you're up.
Thank you, Katie. This is Kelly S., recovered compulsive overeater in Oklahoma. My timer here. So we feel elimination of our drinking is but a beginning, but just the beginning. And that was the thing I just didn't understand because, like other people shared, you know, my whole focus before was about to stop compulsively overeating. You know, that was my goal. How many days had I gotten back to back? And let me tell you guys, in 30-plus years, I never even made it a year. Never even made it a year because that was all I tried to focus on was that. The problem was food wasn't my problem. Living was my problem. I had no idea how to do life. You know, I was, as I said, stark raving abstinent. I wasn't a different person. You know, I've read this book many times. I'd seen that entire psychic change rocketed into the fourth dimension, and I'd be like, well, don't know what that means. It's not happening for me. But I never understood it until I started listening to Vision for You and had the big book shown to me and the importance of working this program day in, day out, as it's laid out in this big book, and finding a solution. What was the solution? Spiritual solution. That was the part I didn't understand. You know, I was looking at the tools for the solution. I was looking for the weight loss, the, you know, that back-to-back abstinence, and that was but a beginning. And then the most important thing was, am I working my steps daily? Am I doing the deal like we hear here every day? You know, I have to do it. It's not just want it or just wish for it. I have to do the work. And, you know, there's a story in the big book later on that talks about the guy that goes in the storm cellar and comes back out after the hurt, you know, the tornado, and he says, isn't it grandma, the wind stopped blowing and everything's just torn up? And that's kind of how my life was here at my home. You know, it's like nobody ever said to me, wow, mom, you know, you're really a different person. And you know what? I actually heard that for the first time. I'm 54. I overheard my daughter telling somebody that the other day. She's 26, and she's like, yeah, before my mom started working her program, she wasn't really very nice, and she was telling her friend that. I'm like, oh, my God, I'm finally hearing my family is seeing. You know, I'm demonstrating this principle. I'm living this program today in my life because why? I stopped compulsively overeating. I put down my binge foods, you know, but I picked up the spiritual tools. I started working this program. I do the steps daily, and I'm living my life differently in the spiritual solution, and I've had that entire psychic change thanks to this program and you guys showing me the big book for the first time after 30-plus years, and with that, I pass. Thank you, Katie, for your service.
Thank you so much, Kelly, and I'm sorry, but we are out of time. So thank you to everyone who shared. Please join us for a second unrecorded hour of study immediately following closing. The share ID for today, Tuesday, March 28th, is 9771. That's 9771. We will now close with the reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. Will Allison L. please read A Vision for You? Our book is meant to be suggestive only.
Yes, good morning. This is Allison L., recovered compulsive overeater in Ohio. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who's still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourselves to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you. Until then,